This is a summary of principles for dealing with the changing world order by bestbookbriefings.com. Principles for dealing with the changing world order: Why Nations Succeed and Fail. By Ray Dalio. These future years will be profoundly different from anything we've experienced in our lifetime, and yet similar to that of many other times throughout history. As a successful investor myself, I've learned to handle and anticipate any situation that came my way. I've studied as many relevant historical cases as I can in order to understand how and why they happened. Through this, I developed a series of principles to deal with them. My study of history revealed that it goes through fairly well-defined cycles of life, much in the same way an organism evolves from generation to generation. Every empire, every dynasty that I studied rose and fell in what I like to call a classic big cycle, with clear markers at each stage. 1. Peaceful and prosperous periods of tremendous creativity and productivity, which improve technology and raise living standards. 2. Periods of depression, revolution, and war, where people fight over wealth and power, destroying many cherished things in the process. Although we'd all like to live in peace and prosperity, both realities serve a purpose in advancing humanity's evolution in the big picture, they're neither good nor bad. While depression and revolution produce more than their share of chaos and destruction, they also serve as a cleansing storm, getting rid of society's weaknesses and excess, paving the way for a new beginning, built on the return of fundamental values. The process of trying to understand history provides us with valuable clues as to what our future will look like. Throughout my life, the dollar has been the world standard reserve currency. Monetary policy has been an effective tool for stimulating economies, and democracy and capitalism are widely held as the superior political and economic system. This may no longer be the case in the future. Anyone who studies history knows that no system, no currency, and no empire will last forever, and yet, almost everyone is surprised when they fall. Understanding the cycle. When looking at the cycle of history, there are three important subcycles that we need to consider: the cycle of debt and capital markets, the cycle of internal order and disorder, and the cycle of external order and disorder. These cycles are the engine that drive the pendulum of opposites back and forth, from war to peace, boom to bust, from the political left and right, to the rise and fall of empires. This swinging is typically caused when people push different things to extremes. The catalysts for the swing in one direction can always be found in the swing to the opposite direction. These cycles can be studied because they've stayed the same throughout the ages, much like the fundamentals of human life have. The reason for this is that human nature doesn't change all that much, either. Fear, greed, and jealousy are just a few of the basic emotions that are constant, major influencers of these cycles. The flow of evolution and its speed bumps. Evolution can be defined as the constant upward movement towards improvement that is driven by adaptation and learning. The changing world order is defined by a chain of continuous evolutions. Various cycles surround this process in a trajectory that you can visualize as a corkscrew. Together, they make the movements that we see in everything, from wealth to technology, sociology, philosophy, and more. Human productivity is the most important force that drives the world's slow but steady improvement in its total wealth, power, and living standards, and it itself has improved over time. With that said, productivity improves at different rates for different people, for reasons like the quality of a person's education, inventiveness, work ethic, and economic situation. Policymakers need to understand these reasons in order to achieve the best possible outcomes for their countries. Investors and companies need to understand them in order to determine what the best long-term investments are for them. Time has shown that the formula for success is a system where well-educated people can compete with each other in a civil manner in order to invent, receive their funding through capital markets, and own the means through which their innovations produce and allocate various resources, which rewards them in the form of profit. However, in the long term, capitalism has shown its capability to create ever-widening gaps in wealth and opportunity, which leads to debt, which leads to economic downturns, revolutions, and wars. These periods of destruction followed by reconstruction made it clear who the powerful were, at the expense of the weak. They established revolutionary new ways of doing things that would set the stage for future periods of prosperity, which themselves overextended, which created new bubbles of wealth gaps and debt, which led to periods of revolution and war. The cycle continues. While these periods bring a large amount of human suffering, we must never lose sight of the fact that it is possible to navigate them. Humanity's ability to adapt and improve is greater than any disaster. Here are some historical examples of the cycle of evolution. While China was a dominant world power for centuries, consistently outperforming Europe, it fell into a sharp decline in the 1800s. Although the Netherlands is a relatively small country, it became the world standard for reserve currency in the 1600s. The United States became the world superpower over the course of the past 150 years, particularly during and after the period of World War II, but it is now in relative decline, while China rises again. The archetypal cycle. The rise. Relatively low debt. Relatively small gaps of wealth and political power between people. People work together peacefully and productively. Solid educational system and general infrastructure. Capable and stable leadership. Relatively peaceful world stage, guided by one or more dominant nations. All this leads to the top. High amounts of debt. Large gaps in wealth, political power, and values. Declining quality in education and crumbling infrastructure. Class-based conflict between people within the same nation. Conflict between countries, empires overextend themselves, and emerging rivals challenge them. This leads to the decline. A painful period of change and conflict that leads to the establishment of new orders, both internal and external. This sets the stage for the next new order, and the new period of prosperity. Determinants and dynamics. The factors that drive these stages of the cycle fall into two categories. 1. Inherited determinants. Geography, where a country is located, what's nearby, and what features its terrain has. The United States and China are both composed of large areas of land that are bounded by the natural barriers of water and mountains, which influenced them both into becoming collective nations and cultures. Geology, a country's natural resources. This is critical. Much of the wealth, power, and relevance of many Middle East countries came about with the importance of fossil fuels, and may fall as the world starts to adopt alternative sources of energy. Acts of nature, a country's share of epidemics, floods, droughts, earthquakes, etc. History shows how much these have influenced the well-being of countries, and their course of evolution, even more so than wars and economic depressions. 2. Human capital determinants. Good human capital and self-sufficiency comes when humans have the capacity to produce more than they consume. Although many countries have natural resources to utilize, human capital is the most substantial one. While inherited material assets eventually disappear, human capital has the potential to exist forever. The critical human nature determinants. Self-interest, survival in particular, is the most powerful motivator for the majority of people and organizations. But whichever party's self-interest matters most is a critical determinant. The desire to gain and hold on to wealth and power. Capital markets, the ability to obtain and collect spending power, is critical to a country's health. The ability to learn from history's examples. The multigenerational psychological cycle, different generations think in different ways because of their own experiences, this leads them to make decisions differently, which of course affects their outcomes, and those of future generations. Prioritizing short-term gratification over long-term benefits, those who favor the long-term tend to end up the winners. Human inventiveness, our greatest power, and driver of our evolution. Cultural determinants. Global thinking, nations who isolate themselves tend to miss out on the best practices of the world, to their obvious detriment. Leadership, people in leadership roles have an influence on all determinants. The cycle of money, credit, debt, and economy. The way collective entities handle their finances as referenced by their income statements and balance sheets is the most significant driver of change in any order. If you have an understanding of your own income, expenses, and savings, and can apply it to other people, you will have a better understanding of the whole picture. One entity's spending may be another's income, so when they cut their expenses, it affects the other as well. One entity's debts might be another's assets, so if they default, this will affect the other's assets, which will require them to cut down on spending, and so on. This dynamic in particular produces a self-perpetuating downward spiral of debt that snowballs into a political issue as more and more people argue about how to split up a shrinking pie. Contrary to common sense, there isn't a fixed amount of money and credit in existence. Both can be easily created by central banks. Most people and organizations like when they do because it gives them more spending power, but when the money and credit are spent, it makes most goods, services, and assets go up in price. It also creates more debt that needs to be repaid eventually. In the end, people and organizations are forced to spend less. In the credit creation phase, the demand for goods, services, and assets are high, and so are their production. In the debt repayment phase, both are weak. As such, money, credit, debt are inherently part of a cycle. The central bank has the ability to set the rate of interest to 0% and roll the debt over and over again so that the debtor never has to pay it back. That would essentially be the same thing as just giving them the money, but it wouldn't look like that on paper. The debt would be accounted as an asset that belongs to the central bank, business as usual. This is exactly what happened in the wake of the economic crisis that the pandemic caused. Although debt eats up equity, central banks can feed it by printing more money, instead. But not all money is made equal. There are certain currencies that are widely accepted worldwide, called reserve currencies. Countries that hold claim to printing these reserve currencies also have a hold of significant borrowing and spending power, as well as a general sort of power over any other country who needs that currency to perform their international business. The long-term debt cycle. Stage 1, little or no debt, physical, hard money is prevalent, gold or silver, for example. Stage 2, claims are based on hard money, like paper money, or notes. Stage 3, debt increases, and trouble comes when there isn't enough income to continue paying the debt, or the amount of claims that people hold in the expectation of selling exceeds the actual amount of hard money, thus making their conversion impossible. Stage 4, debt crises, defaulting, and devaluation arrives, which leads to central banks printing more money, which breaks their link to hard money. Stage 5, flat money is introduced, which eventually leads to the almost total devaluing of money. When credit cycles reach a limit, the logical and classic response is for central banks and governments to create a lot of printed money to spend and keep the economy moving. For example, see the 2008 debt crisis, when interest rates reached 0%. But throughout history, rulers have tallied up debts that don't come due until long after their own reigns have ended, leaving it to their successors to foot the bill. Policymakers utilize four tactics against debt. 1. Austerity, or spending less. 2. Defaulting on debt, and restructuring. 3. Transferring money and credit from those who have more, to those to need it more, i.e. raising taxes. 4. Printing more money. When enough money is printed that it hurts the actual and potential returns of cash and debt assets, it drives money out of those assets and into inflation hedge assets like gold, commodities, and digital currencies. But rather than boost the value of money, this leads to a self-perpetuating decline. The cycle of internal order and disorder. People struggle to create, obtain, and distribute wealth and power, as influenced by things like ideology and religion. In broad strokes, this is the largest concern for most people, and it leads to a cycle of order and disorder which comes in six stages. Stage 1, the new order begins, and their leadership gathers power. Stage 2, systems for allocating power, as well as government bureaucracies are created and refined. Stage 3, peace and prosperity. Stage 4, massive excesses in spending and debt, and the widening of wealth and political gaps. Stage 5, terrible financial conditions and conflict. Stage 6, civil war, and revolution. Every country is currently going through these stages, although not at the same time. China and India are in different stages than the United States and most of Europe, and this difference influences the way countries relate to each other. Some countries rise, and others decline. The first stage in this cycle comes right after a war, and it's the time during which losers must submit, and winners gain control. Once this is accomplished, the new leaders clean up the remaining opposition, and then fight among themselves for power. The duration and severity of this period of purging ranges widely, depending on the degree of conflict between the leaders and the opposition, as well as among the leaders themselves. It also depends on the level of development of the various governmental departments and bureaucracies that the new order inherits. At its worst, this stage of fighting to consolidate power has produced the most brutal periods in history, from the post-French Revolution period in 1789 called the Reign of Terror, and the post-Chinese Civil War period in 1949 called the Anti-Rightist Campaign. The cycle of external order and disorder. Powerful countries rule when individual countries hold more power than the collective. If the US, China, or other countries are more powerful than the United Nations, then they determine how things go, not the United Nations. The world order follows the law of the jungle more than international law. There are five kinds of fights between countries. 1. Economic wars, tariffs, restrictions on imports and exports, etc. 2. Technological wars, which technological advances are shared, and which are protected in the interest of national security. 3. Geopolitical wars, territory and alliances. 4. Capital wars, financial tools like sanctions, and the access to foreign markets. 5. Military wars, actual combat and deployment of military forces. Wars often start within the economy, long before anyone fires a bullet. Opportunistic countries will often take advantage of weak countries for their own gain. A brief summary of recent history. Once, countries didn't exist. Territories were run by families. When their estates grew large enough, they turned into kingdoms and dynasties. Emperors and kings fought constantly for wealth and power, like the Rurik dynasty, which would later be overtaken by the Romanovs. The Ming dynasty controlled the majority of China, and at the time they were the most advanced and powerful empire in the world. Ironically, and yet typically, the size of the Ming dynasty is one possible reason as to why it fell. Its emperors believed that it didn't need anything else, and so they ceased China's exploration efforts, closed its borders, and retired to a life of indulgence, turning over the government to their bureaucrats. This led to infighting, corruption, and eventually, vulnerability. There was a shift away from pragmatic scientific study and innovation toward pedantic scholarship. Religions and their leaders were much more powerful, and science as we currently know it didn't exist yet. The Pope and the Catholic Church ruled over papal states. The world as a whole was considerably less egalitarian. The rise of China. The typical Chinese dynasty, much like any typical empire, lasted around one or two centuries. By and large, they all followed the same patterns of rising and declining. Inequality and fiscal problems grew over the dynasty's lifespan, with monetary problems being a common contributor to the empire's decline. Early in the dynasty, the quality of government and infrastructure tended to rise, and then fall over time. Internal conflict came about from economic differences paired with bad times, like famine, debt, poor governance, conflicts with outside forces, and natural disasters. Confucian and isolationist cultural influences that favored scholarship over all other aspects of society weakened China's competitiveness in business, technology, and the military. This led to it being beaten by stronger barbarians, like the Mongols, the foreign powers of the Opium Wars, and the rest of the world in general during the Maoist isolation period. China's geography and terrain has had its own significant impact, as it is varied and often changing. The north is cold, flat, and dry, whereas the south is mountainous, warm, and wet. This leads to an inconsistent crop production. This, combined with shortages of clean water, farmland, and coastal Fishers have made it so that China is historically vulnerable to food shortages and starvation. Today, China struggles with air pollution, which affects its citizens' health negatively. China's past and present leaders have learned from their history, leading them to develop and guard against natural and political disasters. Meanwhile, most Americans fail to learn from their own relatively short history. The prospect of a revolution or a war seems unimaginable to Americans, but both are seen as inevitable to the Chinese, who have seen these things happen again and again. Most Americans focus on whatever event is particularly relevant, but Chinese leaders tend to view current events in the context of larger evolutionary patterns. Chinese leaders concern themselves with a planning horizon that spans more than a century, because they know that it's how long a good empire lasts, at the very least. A typical arc of development has several multi-decade phases, and they account for this. The first phase of the contemporary Chinese Empire took place under Mao, when the revolution happened, winning control of the country and solidifying power and institutions. From 1949 to 1976, Mao worked with his various ministers to consolidate power and build China's foundations of institutions and infrastructure. Mao ruled China as a strict communist empire, isolated from the rest of the world. The second phase of building up wealth, power, and unity without posing a threat to the world order took place under Deng and his successors. During this phase, China adapted a collective leadership model, opened itself up to the outside world, and integrated and developed market capitalist practices. It became stronger in ways that would appear to be symbiotic to its competitors, particularly the US, to whom they lent money and sold cheap goods. As a result, the US accumulated dollar-denominated liabilities of debt, and the Chinese accumulated dollar-denominated assets. The third phase of building on these achievements and moving China into the future is set on the 100th anniversary of the People's Republic of China, 2049. Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, ruling over a richer, more powerful economy that found itself overly in debt, corrupt, and at odds with the United States. To combat this, he kickstarted economic reforms while containing debt growth, and took an increasingly global-looking stance. He was proactive in reducing China's gaps in education and income, as well as in protecting the environment and consolidating his political control. As China's strength grew, and Xi's bold plans like the Belt and Road Initiative became more visible, tensions with the United States increased, especially with Donald Trump's election. China's position in regards to the US became that of the rapidly growing power versus the dominant one. Xi's administration has been aggressively pursuing reform policies that will open its markets, manage its debt and currency, support entrepreneurship, establish sensible, well-developed regulations, and build its technological capabilities in order to future-proof itself. China's goal is to be a modern socialist country that is prosperous, strong, democratic, culturally advanced, and harmonious. Ultimately, they aim to make their economy about twice the size of the US's and to broadly share the benefits of its growth. Other developments. China's strength has provoked a desire for more moderate policies. In 2009, China declared their indisputable sovereignty over the East and South China Seas to the United Nations. China has made heavy investments in the infrastructure of the developing world, most notably through the Belt and Road Initiative, which extends their reach through Central Asia and Africa. China is working to advance its technologies, as well as the quality of the decision-making that enables them. The goal is likely to become the leader in big data, big AI, and big computing, and improve faster than the US. The development of China's currency, the renminbi, proves to be detrimental for US markets, and beneficial for China's. Their capital markets will likely also follow suit in order to compete. In terms of military power, China is now stronger than the United States, at least in the East and South China Seas. While tensions arise, especially in regards to Taiwan's sovereignty, the US stands to lose any potential wars in that region. The future. Dealing with the future comes down to these key skills. Correctly perceiving what is happening and adapting in response, even if it can't be perfectly anticipated. Making an estimated probability for what could happen. collecting enough knowledge to at least partially protect oneself against unacceptable outcomes, establishing worst-case scenarios, and finding ways to mitigate the ones that will be disastrous. Diversifying and prioritizing long-term benefits instead of short-term gratification. Knowing the smartest people in their fields, and picking which ones to listen to. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.